There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And welcome once again to the H&J Daily, some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Now, Andy, we set the listeners to work today, didn't we?
Yes, it's very rare. We took some calls.
We did. We took some calls. And nobody had been sacked. That's when we normally take calls. But no, today was really trying to perfect a Sean Dyche impersonation, wasn't it? Really?
That's right, yeah.
And we found some very good ones among the listeners. You'll hear that. Also, we had an online poll to find the best laugh of the many great laughs we've had on this show.
Oh, we've had so many great
laughs. I don't mean it from that point. I mean people who've got funny laughs. And an interesting winner, as you'll discover.
We had a bit of a moan about
Chelsea. Had a moan about Chelsea, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Ned Bolton came in, who's normally he's here to talk cycling from ITV, but has written an excellent book on the world of darts. So we had a bit of a darts nostalgia chat. So here it all is. We hope you enjoy it.
You know that statue of Billy Wright outside Molyneux?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Lovely.
They've just erected two more. One's of John Moss.
Oh, yeah,
that's lovely, that one. And one's of Murata's heart. It's a very small, small one.
Is that one of those, like those things you often see on a pinhead? Is that what you're getting
at? Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that guy does those drawings on a pinhead.
Yeah.
Really, honestly.
Now, you've got your theory. We're going to talk to Tony Evans shortly about all the games, but just give us your theory on why you feel Drogba would have scored that goal. You should have had a penalty. If people haven't seen it, there was a moment last night when all really Morata had to do was get a foot on the ball, much like Lacazette did. Lacazette knew the challenge was coming last night and still got something on it and got the goal.
And got injured, but got a goal.
Yeah. So you claim Morata should have had that kind of heart.
No,
really.
My son said to me, Diego Costa would have just basically taken the defender, the goalie, the ball. Everything would have ended up him. Everything would have ended up in the net, but he would have scored.
Yeah.
Whereas Morata, I think the reason John Moss didn't give it is he felt that Morata was anticipating the challenge. I think it was a penalty, but
yeah, it was a penalty.
There was and also there was a foul on Willian in the build-up. But if you have 17 shots at goal, dominate the game, but and your opponent has six, and you lose 2-1, and then that's the problem. And even last night, my wife said, "You don't seem that upset about it," but I thought, I'm not, because what's the point of being upset?
Yeah.
When you haven't got a striker, if you haven't got a striker, then you're not going to finish in the top four. You'd be lucky to finish in the top six.
Well, you have got a striker.
No, if you haven't got a striker that's got 20 goals. If we had Kane, if we had Aubameyang, if we had Lacazette, if we had any of those top strikers.
Would Giroud scored that one last night then?
Well, I think he would, but he might not have been in that position. Giroud is a good backup. He's good off the bench. He's good in certain games, but he's not going to get you 20, 25 goals a season. Yeah. And that is what Chelsea need until they get that. And then they've got the problem with Hazard, who, doesn't seem that particularly.
You think he's starting to think of Madrid, yeah?
Well, I think I think he's realised quite quickly that Chelsea aren't going to do anything. They're probably not going to finish in the top four. And he's had enough. He wants to play in the Champions League. He doesn't want to play in the Europa League. He's a top player. I don't blame him. He's been there long enough. And if he wants to go and they can get the right money for him, I wouldn't blame him for wanting to go.
Like the fact Sarri has to have that kind of old, like he's found a sort of dog end in the street. And he's just trying to get the last bit, because he can't light it.
They're special things.
Are they really? Yeah, I thought he smokes them when he can, and when he's got the last bit, he just sucks on it or something.
But his system, you need, if you think about what he had at Napoli, he had two quick defenders at the back who could pass, he had a striker in Mertens and they had other strikers, Milik and people like that, who can score goals.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm a bit loath to judge him too much, although, there are certain things like Alonso, the other, the game against Fulham, Ian Holloway picked it up on commentary, saying something wrong with Alonso. He's not right. We all knew it. We could see he's not. He's either fatigued or he's injured or something about him. He's mentally not happy or something. There's something about him. He's just not playing the way he normally plays. We don't know why, but there'll be a reason. So you can't play him against... Shouldn't have played him last night. And you can't play him against City. I mean, Sterling. Sterling, he'll not only have him on toast, it'd be like a bruschetta. It'd be like, it'd be tomato and mozzarella and oil.
It's very cosmopolitan.
Thank you very much.
And so you're not expecting much from the City game?
I very much enjoyed the United game, though, which was the one that was on telly.
Yeah, thriller, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good. And I was thinking, Diogo Dalot.
Yeah.
Diogo is odd. It'd be much better if he swapped the A, the O with an A, then he'd be Diego Dolo, which is much more of a footballer's name for me.
Why don't you put that to him? Let's get Moose to do that in the mix zone one day. Well, that'd be great. Diogo, can I ask you a question? Why aren't you called Diego? And why don't you just swap those two letters and put one in your surname?
It's good, isn't it? I always enjoy the work of Darren Fletcher and Steve McManaman. I think they're good together. But at one point there, Steve, he did correct himself, but he called Andre Mariner, he called him Andre Marion Mariner. I thought, yeah, that's a better name too. I like that.
Maybe he's known as Marion in the refereeing fraternity.
That's
I don't
what
know.
You think, isn't it? So, but I am coming round to admitting that actually Arsenal are, you know, pretty, they are different under Unai Emery. You know, Unai Emery is the Gary Johnson of the Premier League.
Mm.
He's taken the same players and he's made them, you know, pretty much.
They were good players. I mean, I think they all, you always felt, Aubameyang was a good player. He used to, you know, he used to terrorise Spurs and he played for Dortmund whenever we played him. Mean, he was one of the hottest strikers in the world. So, you know, they're starting to get the best out of him.
Yeah, he was a good buy. He cost 70 million. He should be. You notice, though, I mean, I like BT's coverage. I've got nothing against it, but they've got one thing. If I could change one thing in sports broadcasting,
what would it be?
It would be the manager's box.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan.
They bring it up. They don't bring it up for 10 seconds. They bring it up for like at least a minute, and the ball always goes behind it. And you're going, what's the point? Yes, we know the managers are going through agonies. They're swearing. They're jumping up and down. You know, we know what managers do. We don't need to see. You can have one quick shot, 10 seconds. Yeah. That'll work. I don't get it. I don't get what the fetish is with this thing, but they love it and they just leave it there and it's really, really annoying.
I just thought the managers had the self-awareness to know it was on them and they started to do an elaborate mime. like they were stuck in it. Maybe do a bit of Rob Brydon's impression.
Good idea. Yeah. I thought Tyson Fury was great with Dez last night. Dez is very good with people and he was amazingly charming. Did you see the interview?
Well, he can be. We know he's been here and done that.
He's
good company.
He was just lovely. His language was good. His demeanour was nice. He's amazing. He's a real enigma, isn't he?
Yeah.
And finally, though, on the coverage as well, then on Rocco's tackle on Guendouzi, whether it was a yellow or red, he goes, let's bring in Phil down. Yellow card, Phil? Yeah, I'm in agreement with Macca. Yellow card, nothing more. I was thinking, well, he could give us a bit more, Phil.
Get off the fence.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Guessing the band behind that may have made more money from it with the Darts Association than they did elsewhere.
Very
because
much so,
it's all about darts, isn't it, that song? We're going to talk about darts now. It's a sport that's been covered amongst cycling and football and other sports by ITV's Ned Bolting. He has written Heart of Darkness. Good afternoon, Ned. Good to see you.
Hello. Nice to be back.
Slightly less glamorous world than the world of cycling.
Don't you believe that? There's a different kind of glamour, isn't it?
Yeah. What? So what sort of drew you to writing this?
Well, I mean, you just need to open the door to a darts venue and it's instantly appealing, isn't it? Because, I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Because on the one hand, cycling is obviously my main gig and darts probably sits at the entire opposite end of the sporting spectrum. You couldn't get further away, could you? Because, you know, cycling's played out over 200 kilometres and darts is 7'9¼". You know, that's kind of it. And the physiques are obviously kind of poles apart.
Yeah, slightly different. Yeah. The body fat
It just
levels.
Occurred to me coming over here, actually, because I'm so used to talking to you about cycling, that there is, I think there's one genuine thing that binds those two passions of mine together. And the fact of the matter is we've all ridden a bike and we've all chucked a dart.
It's true, yeah. Mm. It's accessible from that point of view, isn't it?
And you really can't say that about many sports, can you? I mean, we haven't all javelined, have we?
No,
no.
That's true, we haven't hammered.
But
we've been hammered, but we've not hammered,
No, it's great. It's just accessible, isn't it? It's a people's game, and it's a peculiarly British phenomenon, isn't it? You
know, it's life on the road with darts. It's partly that. It's partly a kind of a potted history of darts as well, and many of the great characters. There was, I didn't realise, looking through the book, as you went through the history of darts, there was a kind of Burt Whedon of darts, wasn't there? There was, what was his name? Something Pike, who was the guy that...
Jim Pike.
Yeah, yeah. Play the game, darts with champion Jim Pike.
Play in a day.
Well, I don't know, but I don't know if he was teaching you, or but he would go off. He was a bit of a star of the world of darts,
there's,
wasn't he, at one
there's
point?
Some brilliant, if you go onto the Pathé website on, yeah, on online, you know, and you look up Jim Pike, there's some wonderful sort of crisply narrated bits about darts made in the late 1940s. You know, the object is to place the dart between the ring, you know, without going first through the lady's face.
That's right.
And it's just brilliant.
There but is, it's almost like knife throwing, isn't it? There? It's a woman with her face right next to the dartboard, Andy, and the
wow,
picture
look
there.
At
look,
that.
So, yeah, so it proves how
but
good he
was. It
was
massive in the 40s. It just wasn't televised, you know. The, you know, Ali Pally was a venue, and Ali Pally's about to spring to life, isn't it, for the World Championships again in a week.
Mm.
And it was a huge darting venue back in the day, in the late 1940s. Tens of thousands used to attend. And bear in mind, they couldn't see a thing. Because there was no, obviously no video relay and big screens and any of that. There was literally just the dartboard. And you were sitting in the Great Hall at Ali Pally on kind of an uncomfortable wooden chair at the back.
Yeah.
Loving the darts.
Well, even in later years, even in the 70s, I mean, watching when we did fantasy football, we did it was an old Leighton Rees News of the World Championship in 1970-something.
Brilliant.
And you used to have coloured lights.
Yes.
So you could see there'd be a big board and the coloured lights would come on to tell you where they were in the board because you didn't have big screens, but you know, people are enjoying it. It was a great atmosphere
after
in
a couple of pints. Didn't really matter anyway,
no,
did it?
Exactly, that's true.
I've just looked up Jim Pike. You wouldn't play darts like that now. He's got like a double breasted suit,
they all did back in the day. Heavy woolen suits,
it was very smart. It's interesting that you talk about the sketch, the famous sketch by Smith and Jones, the 9 o'clock news sketch, you know, double brandy and all that.
Yeah,
but it had a really kind of deep effect on the game. All the players have said so, haven't they? A huge effect on it.
I mean, it took me 3 years to write this book, and over the course of that, I read the pretty much, well, you've just pointed out one book I haven't read, actually, Wayne Mardle's.
It's very good. We recommend it.
Other than that, I think I've read every book that's been written about darts, and without exception, every single book references this sketch by Not the 9 o'clock News, and he's going for a double, and you know, you remember they all drink themselves under the table.
Wayne talks a lot about drinking and the drinking culture of darts, and his own battles with, not necessarily with drink, but whether to play with a couple of glasses or not have a couple of glasses.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a, I mean, certainly a game that is played in the mind, darts, isn't it?
As well
as the physical skill of it.
100%. I mean, the physical skill is your entry. But, you know, to progress on from that, I think it's an entirely psychological game, you know. And so the alcohol does play a part, you know. I think, you know, for a couple of reasons. One is that's where the game was born, right? So how do you get good? You probably spend a lot of time in the pub. Although that's changing, actually, quite rapidly with the new generation of players. But also, I think that genuinely it has a kind of performance-enhancing quality to a certain extent because it enables you to blank out, to a certain extent, the white noise and zone in on that muscle memory and that focus, you know, and I think that's kind of why it's part of the game.
Just going back to that sketch, it was the feeling that some players have said it was the worst thing that ever could have happened to darts. It was a terrible thing because they loved it the way it was. But I mean, generally, when they look at it now, did it sort of ultimately sort of sanitise darts? Well, certainly from the player's point of view, not drinking at the hockey, etc.
Well, you know, this is back in the day where the Embassy World Championship, the year I think I've already referenced, was on the BBC, and it was of national importance, wasn't it? But towards the end of the 1980s, it had started to curdle somewhat, and people were kind of moving beyond it, and it was a bit infradig, and you know, people had kind of lost interest. Then came that sketch, and I think the television executives kind of, they lost their bottle with it at that point. They thought, actually, this is an outdated dinosaur of a sport. Like, we're gonna drop it now. And the BDO, who were in charge of darts at that time, you know, they were incredibly nervous, and they kind of made a mess of the whole thing. And you could credit that one. That was one of the moments that created this split between the BDO and what ultimately became Barry Hearn's PDC, which is now this kind of like juggernaut, cash-generating juggernaut that, of course, Phil Taylor powered. So that, hilarious, isn't it? One sketch by a couple of Oxbridge graduates who had no relationship with the game actually played a pivotal moment in the development of this sport.
Amazing.
The split's been good for the sport, though, hasn't it? I think maybe not for the ones left
behind.
The BDO,
behind,
The BDO, but for Barry Hearn and for the World Championship. It's a special event now, isn't it? We look forward to it at this time of the year.
Yeah, we do. I mean, the BDO's struggling a little bit, and I've written about, you know, I don't want anyone to get the impression that this is just a homage to the PDC and the thing it's become, because I, you know, spent quite a lot of time in in the bosom of the BDO, which fulfill is still there.
Yeah,
and it's very much the grassroots organisation. You know, it's much more fostering of the women's game, for example. The standard, arguably, is a little bit lower, but it has a different vibe, and I think the two kind of coexist to some extent, at least.
You also sadly a couple of people in the book that we've lost. Eric Bristow. And Jim Bowen, because you talk about the importance of bullseye. The fact they put sort of darts into the mainstream and in people's homes every Sunday evening had a big effect on the game, didn't it?
Big effect on all of us, didn't it? Yeah. I mean, it was you know, it's all our collective childhood. Well, certainly mine, you know, bullseye was like that. Bullseye would come on the telly just at the moment you thought, I haven't done my homework. You know, I'll do my homework after that. I'll watch Bullseye first. And it was, I mean, you look at the ratings it got. Absolutely smashed out of the park programs like X Factor and Strictly. You know, this was an enormous part of our cultural life, presented by Jim. And you're right, he sadly passed away. Jim, he wasn't in the best of health when I spent an afternoon with him, but presented by a man who, by his own admission, was one of the most chaotic, inept and fumbling presenters that British television had ever produced.
He was very funny about it.
But he's brilliant. You know, Jim could barely get a line out of autocue correctly. And I, you know, I asked him about this. Some of this I thought would become urban myth. that thing about, you know, and you're unemployed, super smashing great and all that. And I couldn't quite believe that had ever happened. But he confirmed to me, you know, it genuinely had. One brilliant story that he told me as well was the whole point of the game was gambling, wasn't it? Gamble up, you know, do you want to go for Bully Star Prize and risk losing your cash that you've accrued to date? And they recorded this episode with a couple of Irish contestants and they said, you got your 50 quid, that's safe. Would you like to go for Bully Star Prize? And the lads went, no.
We've
had a great day, Jim. We'll take the 50 quid. Yeah. And they stopped recording and Jim said, No, listen, that's not how the game works.
There has to be an end game.
That's not really how it works. So I'll tell you what, I'll give you the 50 quid, but now you just answer, you know, we'll gamble up.
Yes.
The camera started to roll again. So what are you going to do? You're going to go for the Bully Star Prize? No, we're not, Jim. But it's an innocent age, and, you know.
Would be a form. I mean, one night at the Football Writers, I think the turn had not turned up or got caught in traffic, and Jim was there as a guest and got up and tells that story. It's a 40-minute story, and it was genius. It was fantastic.
I saw Jim in Edinburgh do a gig, which was all about his time on Bullseye. It was great.
The director of that show, Andy, and I worked with him on a pilot of a game show. There's a guy called Peter Harris, and he quoted in this. And we worked with Peter. He was interesting fella, and I love the kind of cruelty of it. That he was the one who had the contact in the speedboat business, Peter,
and he
said, "Well, we're going to get all these speedboats and then give them as prizes to blokes from Bloxwich," you know. So, but then he says, "What we've got to do with this kind of cruel twist that when they'd lost, it was him said, let's show them what they would have won," and
that's
they said.
Right.
Knowing Peter Harris would have said, "Don't worry, love. I'll get in on their face. I'll get
tight
on their face.
Exactly.
Nice and tight shot to see what they look like when they see what they would have won." It's fantastic.
But, you know, but the game show Bullseye sits entirely comfortably with the game of darts, doesn't it? Because it's just about, it's like any sport, really. It's just about human emotion, isn't it?
Mm.
And I try and answer in one of the chapters of the book, is it a sport? Because that's the thing that always gets, you know, asked about darts. Mm. And I love the fact that darts, its own regulations forbid the wearing of athletic footwear, right? So if you turn up in any kind of sport-related footwear, you have to change into a pair of kind of like school shoes.
That's brilliant.
So you know, people wonder and fret about whether or not it's a sport. I don't think it matters a jot, and nor does darts really care. I mean, darts has lobbied to become an Olympic sport, and it's part of UK sport, slightly hilariously now. But it is a sport, but who gets, you know, ultimately these kind of like narrow definitions of human activity, which is what darts is, where do they lead us, you know?
Yeah.
Because you guys fill hours and hours of airtime here on TalkSport. You're not, in many ways, you're not actually talking about the sport, are you? You're, per se, you're talking about human foibles, weakness, glories, vanities, character. It's just about life, isn't it?
Sure,
and
sure.
It's all on the same spec. Why do we have to define things as one or t'other? Darts is darts is darts, just like potatoes are potatoes, you know? I mean, it's just
what about a cycling version of Bullseye presented by you?
Oh, now you're talking.
I mean, that's two blokes.
Well, you know.
The non-cyclist and the cyclist
and somebody else.
Yeah, right, on the tour, that would be fantastic.
I've been lobbying to get a darts cycling duathlon going, right? Where you have two teams, right? a team genuinely on the track, then a London velodrome. You have a team of four cyclists against a team of four darters.
Yeah.
Right? Each one by one, it's a relay, so one by one they go off and they've got to do a lap of the velodrome, right? Then they've got to go into the middle and throw a 20, right? And then crack on. So you get a brilliant oscillation, wouldn't you? The cyclist would be inept beyond belief at hitting a 20, wouldn't it? In the meantime, you've got the darter going around the track.
You may be onto something. I think the good people at ITV are listening. And Eric Kai's a bit of a theme running through the book, isn't he? I mean, because most people you kind of talk to, it's like, well, you want to talk to Eric about this. And a lot of it goes through Eric. And he sort of straddles the two eras, doesn't he, really? Yeah.
He was darts. Yeah. Eric, with Eric's advent, you know, in the late 1970s, that exploded it into you know, prior to that, it had still been a kind of a game that had been locked away in the snug a little bit.
Mm.
But with Eric's charisma, his kind of malevolent charisma, I have to say, he was a frightening character on and off the screen. I think he just burst into the mainstream and he dragged the game with him, you know. And without Eric, then I don't think the whole PDC revolution in the 1990s with Phil Taylor would ever have happened either. I think Bristow was the one who kicked the door down into
Taylor was his protégé, wasn't he?
And Taylor was his protégé. Exactly right.
And that's an amazing story.
Isn't it?
You write about that, isn't it? The idea that he kind of moves up to Stoke and the Potteries and opens a pub and and then kind of finds this guy who's pretty good. And then Taylor does the same thing, doesn't he? They kind of take another young player under their wing, and
that's right. Yeah. I mean, that's the way it often worked. They used to split their winnings and all that sort of thing. Mm. I mean, Taylor is a direct result of Bristow, you know, in many ways. But I was writing the book, and I shy away from meeting face to face with Eric. I mean, you know, you bear in mind how his career kind of he pulled the pin on his own career with his injudicious remarks, which I don't think we need to go into now, because they were pretty distasteful at the time. And you know, he disappeared by the time I was writing this book into the shadows, really. And he was a difficult guy to access. He closed himself off to a certain extent from the world. I do, towards the end of the book, have an encounter with him and an exchange of views that is quite surprising, actually, right at the end. But it was shortly after, literally a matter of weeks after I finished writing the book, that we got news of him passing away. Yeah. So it was an extraordinary turn of events.
Well, we wish you well with the book.
Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, it's a fun subject. I mean, it's good, A, it's coming out at Christmas because people buy books at Christmas, and B, of course, the World Championships are just about to start.
Who's going to win? You got a view? Have you got a view?
No, we don't know enough about it, but Van Gerwen will be right up there as usual.
You would think, wouldn't you? Have you got a favourite? Have you got a little bit of a sneaky bit of value for us then?
Yeah, look out for Gary Anderson, I think. If he's got over Fartgate.
That was hilarious. If only you'd had time to write about that, no one would have believed it.
Exactly.
Fantastic. So Heart of Darkness is available now. Blink Publishing are the publishers. And pick up a copy. Good to see you. Thanks for coming.
Cheers, guys.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
I love to laugh. Loud and long and clear. I love to laugh. It's getting worse every year.
Yes, now, over the years, we were just chatting yesterday, and I think we've had some great laughs, people with great laughs on the show, haven't we?
Oh, we have, yeah.
Or on the station, generally. Yeah. And we often think, you know, it comes down, you know, we've just been here about the 100 best women footballers. We all love a poll, don't we?
No, we love a poll.
We all love to come up with the order, the top 10, the top 5, or whatever. We all want to know who's the best. So we've decided to do that with laughs, and we've decided to let you vote this afternoon. And we're going to kick you off with the first of the trademark laughs you've probably heard on TalkSport over the years. It is the former Manchester United and Aston Villa goalkeeper, a regular on Breakfast, of course, Mark Bosnich.
Goodbye.
It's what they used to call a dirty laugh.
I quite like it.
It's like a sort of panto dame laugh, isn't it? It's fantastic. It's Danny LaRue-like for one for the teenagers.
Yes, it has got a bit of LaRue-ish.
She's in it once more just so you can get familiar. Yeah, here we go.
On Mother Kelly's doorstep.
See what I mean?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Number two is basically almost, it's not an impression of a famous laugh. It's just the way this person laughs, which happens to be just like Peter Griffin from Family Guy. And he's our old mate from ESPN. It is indeed Matt Scott. Have a listen to this.
That was a thriller.
There we are. Good, yeah. Just once more so you can get familiar with this. Hear that again. It's Matt Scott as Peter Griffin, but not meaning to be.
That was a thriller.
We recorded that after the fourth goal against Tottenham.
I think he was doing that.
Yeah.
Of course, while we're talking of panto, maybe that's why it kicked it off this week, because we started to think about Claudio Ranieri's laugh from back in the day. This was at an old Chelsea press conference. And again, if we've got Mark Bosnich playing one of the ugly sisters in this panto, Claudio's playing the villain. Listen to this laugh.
Yeah!
Here we are once more.
Yeah!
It's very good, isn't it?
It is a good laugh, isn't it? So that was number three.
Yeah.
Now we move on to Bob Bubka. Golf. One. You know, he's a jovial chap, Bob, but you don't often hear a kind of proper old laugh from him. But this is what it's like.
It's quite good.
It's a slow burner. It is. And then it sort of tapers away. Let's hear it once more.
It's pretty good.
He's almost barking by the end of it.
Yeah.
Now, we've noticed Motti has been kind of often impersonated.
Yeah.
But no one's ever done his laugh before, have they? And he has got a bit of a trademark laugh as old Motti, hasn't he? So here he is.
As long as it's Loftus cheek.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just a kind of an old school sitting in the front row of a sitcom laugh, isn't it?
I don't know how you get more laughs like that just for saying the words Loftus cheek.
Most people are slightly tougher audience. Just say some other. Just say Hudson and Doyle being fit. And let's hear Motti again.
As long as it's Loftus cheek.
There we are. So that was Motti. And finally, it's probably the most famous.
This is the worst.
It is the worst. I mean,
I've seen the effect this has on people. They grimace.
So when you go on tour with Moose, it is Moose, of course. You go on tour with Moose and you're all in. You know, we were in this very nice restaurant, weren't we, in Moscow. It's very kind of nice place, all of big gang of us having a nice sort of meal amongst the kind of. The people of Russia, and then suddenly you hear this.
So there you go.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, that's not even as bad. No, normally it's really, really high pitch.
It can clear. And it always gets. It's guaranteed to get a dirty look from everybody else in the room.
Yeah.
That doesn't know what's coming. Let's hear it again.
So there you go.
Like a chimpanzee.
True, yeah.
So, what's the best one of those? Is it? Mark Bosnich with his panto dame? Is it Matt Scott as Peter Griffin? Is it Claudio's panto villain? Is it Bob Bubka's slow burner that tails off? Is it, what Motti says, how do you describe it? It's, I say, front row of the sitcom. Yeah. It's a cackle. That's exactly
cackle.
What it is.
Good
it's a
word.
Cackle, says the producer. And the moose, which is part chimpanzee, basically. You can vote at TSHNJ. Just a bit of fun, no prizes. TSHANDJ. We will find out definitively before 4 o'clock what is the best laugh that we've ever had here on the show.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Good afternoon. It's Paul Hawksby. Andy Jacobs is outside, I'm guessing at the moment, moaning about Chelsea to Adrian Durham and not realising the show has restarted. But he'll suddenly hear me talking and think, blimey, we're back on, and sort of saunter in about 30. Blimey, this is late even for him. I mean, the producer might be chasing him up. Anyway, what's coming up this afternoon? Dave Kitson joins us, former Reading. So, yeah, thanks for popping in. You were moaning about Chelsea outside with Adrian, weren't you?
Yep.
Yeah, I told you. I could have won money.
Jason, actually.
Oh, Jason. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. You've got a captain.
Basically, we need two new fullbacks, centre-half and a striker.
Okay. Well, don't bring your troubles. Don't bring your troubles to our door.
What was I wanted to start? Oh yes, this was because remember we had that story about the Chinese marathon, half marathon, where 238 people, something like that, were disqualified.
250 runners, yeah.
Yeah,
they took shortcuts and they hired stand-ins to complete a half marathon. Yeah.
Well, here's another one. This player, he should have taken part in that race. Perry Newburn, 64, lied about running New Zealand's length in record time. Later admitting he was driven for parts of the run.
Really?
That's great, isn't it? I could beat Mo Farah if I got a lift around the London Marathon.
That's like our old mate Lord Bunbury when he used to Surrey and Botham's walks, wouldn't he? He would get a cab most of the way, wouldn't he? Until Beefy caught him out, saw the cigar smoke in the back of a taxi.
It's good.
We should
isn't
thank
it?
Lord Bunbury for his Christmas card. Thank you very much, David, for
very,
that.
Very, very nice. The looking at the court circular, the Duchess of Cornwall viewed the Munnings, the Alfred Munnings exhibition. Wow. I just wondered if it was held at a Munnings warehouse.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, yeah. For Australian cricket fans. Yeah, yeah. What is the Alfred Munnings Award, Andy? Did you look into it or
no,
not?
No, it's just that Alfred Munnings was a famous. It's not an award, it was an exhibition.
Oh, an exhibition. Okay.
Not an award.
Enough,
I don't know what the Alfred Munnings Award is.
Now, Neymar, he has said that he feels to be seen as a truly great player. He needs to play in the Premier League, which probably will come to a surprise to people like Pele and Diego Maradona and Neymar, none of which played in the Premier League.
Oh, yeah.
But I was just thinking, I mean, I think he's looking at the long game, but why can't Neil Warnock get in there for January?
What, Neymar?
Yeah.
I don't think so. But the problem with Neymar playing in Britain or in England is he'd only go to one club and they don't really need strengthening at the moment, do they?
Who's that? Which one?
Oh, Man City. Who else could afford Neymar?
No one. That's it. It'll be the club. They don't want Neymar.
It'd be great if Joe Lewis said to Daniel Levy, I'll tell you what, you know, all these years of me not really investing in
I've
the
I've got
club.
More money than City. I just choose not to spend it.
Yes.
I spend it much like the people of Bloxwich on speedboats. So, but instead of buying a new boat this year, Joe says, I'll spend it all on the team. Imagine
true,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good, isn't it?
It's not going to happen.
Now, I've finally given up trying to do Sean Dyche. I just give up. I can't get the voice at all.
It's quite a difficult one to crack, isn't it?
But we've discovered, after hearing this clip of Sean, that our producer can actually do him. And so
it's not bad. It's not bad when he's had a drink, like most of his impressions.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. So
like most of his work, to be honest.
Yeah. The Sean Dyche the other day had a bit of a fallout with Moose. That was kind of good humour, but Moose said that was unacceptable, the performance. And in the midst of it, he said, well, you say it's unacceptable. I don't accept that. But he didn't blame him for saying it was unacceptable because, as Sean pointed out...
That's your job, by the way.
That's your job, by the way.
That's your job, by the way.
Now, yours is getting too high. It's up there. It's not John Major. You're up there.
Yeah.
Let's hear it again, because if you're going to get Sean right, because it's not an easy impression, let's try it once more.
That's your job, by the way.
That's your job, by the way.
That's your job, by the way.
It's a bit like Butch from the Sooty Show. Hello, Mr. Corbett. What's going on here then, Sue? It's a bit like that, isn't it? Now, get the producer in for a second, because he thinks... But it's going to become one of those... I mean, if that was Sean Dyche's catchphrase, if that was a sort of T-shirt or mug in the Burnley Club shop that said, that's your job, by the way, but it's not really. Mm. All you're capable of saying, John, our producer, good afternoon, is that phrase as John...
Hi. He's put on his radio voice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hi.
So go on, then let's hear it once more and then let's hear your attempt.
Not to put too much science behind it, but the key to it is in the Northamptonshire accent.
Ah, okay. Is that what you've been studying?
Kettering.
You've spent a couple of months in Kettering perfecting this.
I've been on a sabbatical.
Of course you have. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's hear it first and then hear your attempt with that little Kettering burr.
It's a lot of pressure, John.
I am Kettering burr.
Should we hear it again?
Here we go.
That's your job, by the way.
That's your job, by the way.
Oh, it's not bad.
That's your job, by the way.
By the way.
Yeah.
By the way.
Now you sound a bit camp now, Andy. So, okay.
No change there.
Go local in the Bible. By the way.
Is that, you've got to get a bit sort of almost
Norfolk.
Really?
And again, this is over-sciencing.
Is that the key?
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you'd like to have a go yourself,
all you've got to do is come on as Sean Dyche and say... That's your job, by the way.
By the way.
No, stop it now. 087-1722-3344. Why, you know, you should be allowed to have a go if you think you've cracked. Maybe Sean will call in. I've just seen him on the telly doing a press conference. Let's see if the Moose can do him. Imagine, we've never had the Moose as an impression.
I don't think the Moose has ever done it. We should ask the Moose if he can do anybody.
Something tells me he'll be truly terrible.
I can't imagine the Moose does any. Everybody does some impersonations. I wonder who.
Even a basic one. Even
like Tommy Cooper or something.
I don't back him to be able to even do that. I mean, I could be wrong. He might be brilliant.
Might be like so just Mike give us Yarwood.
One, just give us one more. But I'd say, can we get Gary Johnson back on the show? Because.
That's your job, by the way.
That's your job, by the way. Yeah. Okay.
It's good.
All right,
thank
then. 08717223344 if you think you've cracked it.
No one will ring up.
No, who can blame them? They've got better things to do than say, that's your job, by the way, as Sean Dyche, haven't they? Surely.
Do you remember the time... You've heard of Buzz Aldrin, of course you have. You might not be interested in moon landings.
Have you heard of Buzz Aldrin? Really?
Well, I don't know.
He's a plumber. I know Buzz.
Buzz Aldrin. Yeah. Do you remember he once famously knocked somebody out who thought that the moon landing was a conspiracy?
Guy used to follow him around. Yeah. Constantly follow him around, saying, swear on this Bible you went to the moon. So one day, Buzz, despite being in his sort of 70s, put one on him.
Well, I'd love him to do the same thing to Nick Knowles. For no other reason than I'd love him to do it. But no, because yesterday he claimed that the USA faked the 69 moon landing.
Yeah.
But this was his theory, Knowles. He said...
Knowles.
Yeah. You'd have to build a spacecraft out of lead to protect the astronauts. When they discovered they couldn't, the only way was to fake it. It's very scientific. That's a typical view of today, isn't it? Really backed by science.
Well, I think he was put in his place, wasn't he? By one of the other people in the jungle.
I don't know, I never watched it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was Anne, wasn't it? Yeah. Anne said, well, I think if they'd faked it, the Russians would have told us.
Yes,
and considering there was this great space race going on, I think it's probably right. But maybe when Nick comes out the jungle, after he's had a chat with Holly and with Deck, Buzz Aldrin might be there in Australia. He's probably got on a flight now. The last thing you'll see when he's drinking his glass of champagne is Buzz, despite being about 80 now.
I'd pay a lot of money for that.
Sticking one on him.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Just before we chat to Dave Kitson, a couple of TalkSport listeners really feel they've cracked the Sean Dyche impression. It's not easy. John's in Liverpool. Hi, John.
That's your job, by the way.
Oh, not bad.
That's a bit more Phil Mitchell,
yeah,
I think,
quite like
John.
That. I'm giving that...
It's got a bit like that.
I'm giving that seven, by the way.
That's your job, by the way.
It's a bit more Phil Mitchell.
Yes,
that was
quite
John.
Menacing, actually,
yeah,
John.
Yeah, don't want no trouble. There we are. Thank you, John. Sean, let's try Sean, who's in Watford. It can't be the Sean. I think he's been on the telly. Hello, Sean.
Hello, guys. Hello, Paul and Andy. I am Sean. It's spelled a different way, S-H-A-U-N.
Okay. So take it away, then.
I'm a Watford fan. I can do a good Frank Bruno and all, but we'll go back to Sean Dyche.
Go on, then.
Right, ready?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
That's your job, by the way. Tommy Cooper.
The first part was completely your own voice.
Bit more
and the last
Louis
part
Armstrong.
Was something. Louis Armstrong. Armstrong. But well done, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
Good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, Andy.
Would you like to attempt a Sean Dyche impression? You have to say, no. That's your job, by the way. Do you want to give it a try?
That's your job, by the way.
No, oh, not sounded, bad.
You know, it sounds a bit like...
try that when you do one with Jeff Stelling on Saturday.
Like, sound like Fagan. So, Jonathan...
It's 1-0, by the way.
Yeah.
I dare you to do that.
It's a goal for Colchester, by the way. So, Mark, good afternoon. Give it to us. Go for it.
Hi, lads. Love the show. Great show, as always. You are great reporters, but that's your job, by the way.
It was good. It got a bit pirate, didn't it?
He was only 3 out of 5 on the marking system.
Well, there's an unofficial marking system, which is on the unofficial marking system. We stay in Liverpool, but this time with Alan. And Alan,
he scored a tremendous five out of five.
You've been talked up by our production team. So, Alan, we understand that you've absolutely knocked it out of the park. So, take it away.
Bit under pressure now, I suppose.
Oh, yes.
But that's my job, by the way.
Oh,
not bad.
That's not bad. Let's hear it once more.
But that's my job, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yes. That is good. That could be Sean. Good. On it in the old compressed bandwidth of a mobile phone, you could phone me up and say, stop taking the mic out of my voice. And I'd think, oh, blimey, I'm really upset.
Sean
Dyche now after the Moose. The king of the Sean Dyche impersonators was Alan, the Liverpool fan. Here he is.
But that's my job, by the way.
That's impressive. That could have been Sean. Well done, Alan. Thanks for everybody who entered. And likewise, thanks for everybody who voted for the best laugh ever on TalkSport. A surprising winner, Bob Bubka.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4pm on TalkSport.
There we are. That's the show this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
And quite a lot of people have already said they've been walking around going, that's your job, by the way.
That's your job, by the way.
We hope you'll be doing that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to be taking that into the evening, Andy?
Well, I think I will. I'm sure the wife will find it very romantic, yeah. As I say to her.
She might ask you to keep doing it. What a thought. Anyway, we'll leave it there. We'll leave you with that wonderful mental image. And we'll see you tomorrow for the clips of the week and lots more besides. Thanks for downloading us.
But that's my job, by the way.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.